I used to work here at the Historic New Orleans Collection. I was what's called the preparator. I handled all the paintings and the documents and antiques. I have a pretty good sense of what everything in this room weighs. That you learn when you work in a history museum about primary sources. History is based on, you know, the primary information of people who saw what was happening, which is then later interpreted by historians that try to place it in a, you know, in a context for understanding. And many times during those first few days of the storm, I glanced around and said, "Boy, I hope somebody's writing this down." And it obviously in my life brought things sort of full circle to become one of those primary sources for something that was indisputably going to become a big moment in the history of New Orleans. It's hard to jump right in on that experience, but perhaps you remember one of the slides was of a young woman in a green shirt standing on top of a second story house. This was about 2 hours after James and I had set out to try to find out what was happening in Lakeview. And we were on the levee. It was a very odd situation. There was a great gulf of water between us and her. And she waved for us. She said, "Would you please call my father and tell him that I'm all right?" And our cell phones were no longer working, so it was, you know, that wasn't possible anyway, but I said softly to James, "We can call her dad, but she's not all right." And that was the sense that you got, I think, in those first moments in Lakeview, was it was a simmer, not a boil, if you know what I mean. There were people standing on their porches having conversations with us about how they'd noticed that the water was rising about a brick every 20 minutes. The police were already active by the time we were there, removing people from their rooftops and rescuing people. There were also comic moments that you would have never expected when James and I on our bicycles made it to Lake Vista, that neighborhood that's, you know, rises right by the lake. They were not flooded. And there were two men standing in a front yard that wanted us to know that if we went to the lake right now, there had been lots of bars that had been wrecked by the storm, and the liquor had floated out into the lake and was now washing up on the shore. And if we wanted to, there was a great treasure out there.
We never did find it, though.
We didn't actually...
We looked.
We made our way to another small piece of comedy that we bicycled for, I'm guessing now, 3 hours to get as close to what we thought was the break in the levee as possible. And when we got there, which was near the Walgreens on Robert E. Lee, it's a funny thing to say, but we bicycled to the Walgreens. And there it was, engulfed in a great lake. And you could see the water moving in our direction, moving from the 17th Street Canal. And it was only earlier in this week that James finally agreed we could not have made it to the breach. That for 11 months, we've debated whether or not if we'd tried even a little harder, we could have gotten right into the throat of the breach. We left 1:30 in the afternoon from the Picayune. It was a coincidence that we both brought our bicycles to the paper. I had learned that during street flooding, a bicycle's very handy, because when you can't drive a car because of fallen limbs or 2 feet of standing water, if you don't mind getting wet, you can bicycle. James had his bike. Earlier in the day, he suggested that we go see Lakeview. It probably tells you that we weren't aware of the degree of flooding. We certainly weren't aware that a football-sized breach had opened in the levee, because we finished the next day's work. We finished putting together the paper that you never saw, before we took off. And we took off and spent something like 6 hours exploring Lakeview and convincing ourselves that, yes, indeed, the worst had happened, that there was no dispute. It wasn't a topped levee. There was no doubt that the levee was had failed severely. Probably the most poignant moment in that was reaching Canal Boulevard near the old Plantation Coffee House. You know what I'm talking about? And we reached there, and Canal Boulevard at that point was a river. No exaggeration. I watched a beer cooler float from the Lakeview side under the railroad bridge and passed just that fast. The water was going by like the Mississippi. And it was at that moment that there was no pretending that James had a house anymore. Knowing where he lived, seeing what we were seeing, it was the situation had become very immediate, no longer abstract. And I kept expecting James to emote somehow, you know, and instead he didn't. And we bicycled on and did our job. By the time we got back, we were, as you can imagine, exhausted, totally wrung out. Someone not from New Orleans asked me the other day, after you got wet and you were on your bicycle and it was night, weren't you cold? And I don't think I was cold again until a couple of weeks later in the Sheraton Hotel or something. But oh, and now I've done it. I've lost my train of thought. And that's probably enough. I think that paints the picture. We got back to the paper, and it was one of those moments like out of a movie where you sort of, oh, we'd lost contact with anyone because our cell phones had failed. And when we got back to the paper, it was one of those little pieces from a movie where you get to walk in the room and say,
"We're all going to die.
You won't believe what we just saw." And I think I'll stop there.
I would say two things about the trip that stick in my mind. One, that as we stood on the railroad bridge by Plantation Coffee House, Doug and I both had the exact same thought, which is that the city is in a great, great deal of trouble. But we never articulated it to each other until months later, that we just sort of watched the water flow under us. We both knew what it meant. We both knew we had to continue reporting and get back to the paper at some point. But we never really talked about what that water flowing under our feet meant for the larger city, even though we both realized it. And the other thing he doesn't mention is that we turned, when we got to the Southern Yacht Club along the Lakeshore Levee, the Southern Yacht Club was still on fire, and the sun was setting, and it actually made for quite a beautiful picture. I have pictures of the Southern Yacht Club on fire with the sun setting behind it, and if you don't count the fact that your city's going down, it's really quite a striking image. But when I looked at the sun setting, I realized we were at least 3.5 to 4 hours from the paper, and that we would be traveling that route back in complete and utter darkness, because there was no moon on Monday night, and there was no lights within 75 miles. So it's the darkest night probably since electricity in the city of New Orleans. And so it was an interesting trip back through the dark in the floodwaters.